We're gonna have a good time. We're gonna do a show. All right, let's have some water.
Let me just say before we start, because I feel like saying it. Fucking Josh, man.
I feel like I said like I can't, this last
yeah,
week. But
okay,
we'll get
all right,
there.
Yeah. Can't say that on the show.
Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and meditation retreats. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my compatriots. John Maltz is here. Hi, John.
I did some light matadoring in college.
How can I just be learning this now?
I had a lot of things to choose from my opening this time. I have a real list, and we can go through them later.
Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
Fucking Josh, man.
Hey, wait, I don't have to edit this show. This is
that's
great.
Right. That's right.
I'm editing.
I guess the guy who's editing can swear.
I'm editing. I'm putting that on me. And here's a little behind the curtains, little show business razzle dazzle, as they say. John said that word for word right before we started recording because he knew he couldn't say it. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to steal that. I'm taking it. Josh, got
to
go.
You're welcome to it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Do you have his address? We're gonna go.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. We're gonna go kill him.
I probably know a few Joshes, and I don't mean them. I mean
my brother's a Josh, but he's not like that.
Okay. I hope not. Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, real problem.
This Josh is real handsome. Not that you
Yeah. also different. I mean, Leon. Not a lot different.
Not what I meant. But yeah,
he's handsome. He's
We are here, of course, to discuss She-Hulk, Attorney at Law on Disney Plus, and we are discussing episode 7, The Retreat. wow, there's a lot here. John Maltz, are you prepared to?
I am. Okay, here we go. So Jen is getting out of the shower when she gets a text from Josh, who can't wait to see her. She gets dressed as a string cheese in a shot before Josh arrives for their date. They shake hands at the end of date one and continue to text and flirt. Date two, she leaves him at the door and kind of regrets it, but he's gone already. Date three is on a Thursday, and they go to a drive-in, and then they spend the night together. Jen wakes up to find him gone. She texts him, then goes to work. Nikki advises her not to text again. Saturday comes, and still no text. She's getting a little wiggy. On Sunday, she wakes up to a call from Blonsky's parole officer. Blonsky's inhibitor has malfunctioned, and he was hoping she'd tag along as he investigates the situation so he doesn't get killed. As she drives out to Blonsky's place, she keeps checking her phone, doing a little singing. She hulks out for safety, but Blonsky is just Blonsky, and he has an excuse involving a chicken. Okay. The parole officer fixes the inhibitor and then skedaddles. Blonsky is chatting with Jen when Manbull and El Aguia, not a matador, show up fighting and bust up Jen's car.
Here's Prime. Which is perfect.
Yeah, Prius Prime. Yeah, yeah. It's a Prime. I like how she drops that. Yeah, yeah. It's not a regular
Prius.
Prius
Prime for the ability to ask questions. Yep. Never mind.
They're learning to deal with their issues from Blonsky. Now, Jen has to wait for a tow truck, so Blonsky takes her for a tour, including the sweat yurt, and tries to get her into the program, but she's not interested. She wanders the grounds looking for a cell signal. Then she stumbles into a therapy session as she finds just a bit of signal. In the circle are Manbull and El Aguia, along with Porcupine, Saracen, and Blonsky. They're all opening up about their issues. Manbull and El Aguia have codependency issues. Saracen thinks he's a vampire, and Porcupine won't take his suit off. Then in walks the Wrecker, who Jen tosses across the room. It seems like the Wrecker has turned over a new leaf, however, but Jen doesn't believe him. They get her to sit down and open up, and she tells them about Josh. She reveals her texts to them. They say she says that she was really into him because he liked Jen and not She-Hulk, who is someone Jen is competing with. The men vow to find Josh and kill him, but Blonsky and Wrecker talk them down. They all say they like Jen for Jen, and she reverts back to Jen form. Porcupine also opens up by taking off his mask. Turns out he's a little ripe in there. They convince Jen to delete Josh's number because he's not worth it, so she does. And then she hits the yurt. As she's leaving, they give her a nice card. Blonsky gives her some platitudes, and she's off. Then we get a flashback to Thursday night. We see Josh slink out of Jen's bed, copy the contents of her phone, take a picture of her sleeping, and then text Hulk King a needle emoji, green potion, and thumbs up.
Dun, dun. I do want to say that my this, you guys seen did you see Wreck-It Ralph?
Yeah.
The scene in with the bat, I was just thinking about it, reminds me of, there's a scene at the beginning where he talks, doesn't want to be a bad
so
guy.
So desperately trying to figure out why you're going here.
So there's a scene with like the bad guy support group at the beginning. Where it's like, saying, right. My favorite is the line from Zanky. Where he's like, just because you bad guy don't mean you bad guy. And I kind of was thinking about that with this, the bad guy group, which is just fantastic.
I really actually enjoyed that. I mean, John C. Reilly, always fun. And she had a guest role in Voyager in the 90s. I know who she is, man. I'm eking out the Voyager reference.
I know, but sometimes I don't want you have to put in the computer sound effect.
Why not? God, people pay money
because
for that sound
effect. I know these things.
Okay.
I am the computer.
Oh, God. Fucking Josh. So let's get to the crux of this matter. I think that I believe she's in She-Hulk form at the time, but her little monologue to the group is effectively the thesis of the show. Do we kind of agree there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well delivered. The way the camera moves is not subtle, but it helps tell the story that we're focusing on who she actually really is. And it's heartrending.
What's interesting is that scene, that little bit is in the trailer, and it comes off as like sort of boasting in the trailer. Whereas when you see it in the show, it's more like, oh, this is not a good thing, actually.
That's really clever. Yeah, I've tried to just erase trailers from my head when I watch stuff. I know.
I'm 90% trailers by volume.
You're more machine now than man.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow, you and Optimus Prime have that in common.
That's a Darth Vader quote. Come on, Dad.
No, but he's literally a trailer because he's made a truck.
I didn't even get your dumb joke, and I have no excuse.
He thought you were not getting his dumb joke.
Our dumb jokes passed. Like,
that's right.
Spaceships in the night. Yeah. Does space have a night? I don't know.
Well, it's dark at night, and it's dark in space.
Sure.
So,
whatever. Moving on. That's the thesis, right? I'm really curious because we thought we would have seen Matt in these past two, Daredevil past two.
Which I kind of love that we have not.
We have
seen
not.
Matt,
I kind of love it.
I hope he, in a way, I hope he doesn't show up at all now.
I kind of like that too.
Tag at the very end of the season.
Exactly. He shows up after the very end.
Did I miss anything?
Exactly. She resolves everything, and then in the just in the tag, it's like, oh, Daredevil shows up, and she's kind of into him. This was not what I expected. I think after this episode, we know why Blonsky won't be showing up in, it isn't advertised to be showing up in the Thunderbolts. And I think that's because he's kind of just a different guy. Like, they've just gone a different direction with that character. I think they made him for the Hulk. The Hulk didn't work. As according to Tim Roth, his character got sunk to the bottom of the ocean in a concrete block or something at like something very, very inhumane, which is not a good way to be. But he was basically taken off the board. And now he's back and he's giving a lot to the show, right? Like he is. God, I don't want to sound like a. like a cultist or anything like that, but he's giving her space to sort of examine her own inner dialogue and her own feelings, like basically exactly what he says, while just spouting platitudes and being kind of feeling a little insincere about it. But it's working. It clearly works. Mm-hmm. She leaves in a better state than when she got there. And that feels like a little incompatible with the Thunderbolts, because I don't think the Thunderbolts crew, I don't think people who pay money to go see the Thunderbolts are going to want to go see a touchy-feely,
right,
you know, giant monster that can smash everything. I would like that. I think that would be funny. But if you look at that lineup, people that buy that ticket want to see a whole bunch of murder and things exploding, right? So sort of incompatible that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think... I'm guessing a lot of what lured Tim Roth back to this part was being able to play a comedic role, right? Yeah. That is, and just to do something different. He seems like the kind of guy who's just like, yeah, I like doing this sort of a weird take or a spin take on these things. I don't want to come back and play the same role because that's no fun for me. I've already done that.
Yeah. Right.
And I can totally see, like, you know, Tim Roth probably doesn't need this job, but you know, I'm sure he gets paid well for it, and I think the challenge of it is probably the thing that draws him to it more than anything else. And honestly, he seems like he's having such a good time and having so much fun that it really works for me, right? Like,
He
is the fact, and that he is such a dope compared to the version of him from a long time ago, right? Like, he was so intense in those movies.
Oh yeah,
I just kind of enjoy him in the super laid back vibe. Like, it's a great turn for that character, and I totally agree. I don't think you need
that character is not a very MCU character, right?
Right.
It's not very
the one from Incredible Hulk.
No.
I do like the idea that somebody so driven to become a special operations soldier, like a highly decorated one. He's pretty old by the time he gets what do they call him? Adopted? Not adopted. Like they're like, he's on loan from the British SAS.
Seconded.
Yeah. He's like, okay, we got the best guy we could possibly find in any of the Allied things, and he's gonna go beat up the Hulk or capture Banner. And I like, it doesn't make sense because it all happens off screen, but there is something true to the character where his complete and utter commitment to being the world's best soldier can translate into, like, okay, now I'm just going to be super dedicated into raising chickens somehow. Like, you could. We don't see how that switch flips, probably turning into a giant rage monster and destroying a bunch of Harlem helped. But the fact that it's there.
Well, like, getting his butt kicked by the Hulk, too, probably.
I feel like that.
Again.
I don't know.
I mean, like, how many times are you banging your head against a wall?
Right. Like,
before you start questioning why you're banging your head against a wall.
Right. Like, yeah, exactly. My take is that he was so dedicated to being a soldier, and then he was like, okay, that did not work out well. I'm ugly and green and a monster, and that's not what I want to be. Now I'm going to dedicate myself to this in a weird, like a weirdly, completely consuming way, in that I'm effectively going to have a cult, which is still not good. But I kind of
although these, I mean, these guys, I mean, the wives thing seems like a cult, but the
it's more of like a
the circle doesn't seem like a cult,
not,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I love the fact that if you look at the posters on the back of the wall, he's got one. My two favorites are Abomaste.
Abomaste is the funniest.
And the other one says, "Fine, Jen says today is today."
Yes, that is really definitely going to be a T-shirt. By the way,
it's a good one.
I feel like if you showed Tim Roth those posters, he'd be like, "Yeah, sure, I'm in." Abomaste. Yeah, let's do it. Sign me up.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's got like his picture as like a self-help guru on the wall, and there's pamphlets and everything. I mean, like, it's not even a cult. It's just it's one of those like retreats that people go to. It's a different, I think that leaning into that aspect of it, I was thinking today about how the whole soulmates thing isn't shown anywhere. I was like, that's probably for the best. That joke played.
Exactly.
Like, you didn't need to hit that beat again.
If you examine it, it's only going to go to dark places. Look, I don't think there was true love between, I mean, seven. It didn't feel like that was going to work out. Like, they had a pseudo-religious vibe to them. Do you guys want to go around the circle of trust here? And who do we talk about first? Let's go to the right. I'm totally visualizing this in my mind. So I think to the right of Jen is Saracen.
A character I knew nothing about until I had to look him up because I was not really familiar with him.
Me either.
There's two, apparently, in Marvel Comics. There's two characters who go by Saracen. There's one who's like a Punisher.
You don't say.
He's just a mercenary.
The deuce, you say.
And then this one, I guess, is a Blade villain.
I mean, he was, you know, he said something about his father, and I was like, is that Dracula or is that Blade? Who's like, who is his,
I think,
father?
It's something about Blade? I don't know. I have no idea. I enjoyed that, though. Yeah. I thought he was pretty funny.
He is out of the daylight, so I don't know what.
Yeah, I don't think he's really a vampire, is he?
I mean, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to know.
It doesn't seem like
it.
He did not burst into flame.
Thinks he's a vampire.
Thinks he's a vampire.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he gets that line in about blood, which is what, you know, right. Turns out to be the truth.
Right. Yeah. No, I thought that was, it felt like a bit of a, like a misdirect, right? Like there's a couple of those in this. Because
he literally said, maybe he just wanted your blood. Oh, I'm sorry, left you. Maybe he just wanted your blood.
Yeah,
oh,
which is like the, yeah. Yeah, it's the thing that you laugh off because the whole premise is
he's
a vampire.
Yeah, right.
But like, I feel like there's a lot of little like drops like that. Like, for example, I kept expecting them all to like turn out like the Wrecker, especially to like be a bad guy and stab her in the back and take her blood, right? Because he was all involved with the attempt to take her blood last time. And even that last scene where they're like, I'm going to give you, they're going to give her the card. I saw him one quick shot. He's like, oh, he's hiding something behind his back. He's just going to stab her with the needle. It's all going to be a play, but it's not. And I love that it subverts that. Yeah. So, I thought that was fun to make all the villains. You feel like kind of untrustworthy of them. Like, oh, is this going to go bad? Like, is it going to turn out they're all still villains? It's like, no, none of them are villains. The real villain is the guy that you thought was okay.
Right.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
And I don't really have any rational reason for this, but I don't think Tim Roth would have let that happen. Do you know what I mean? Like Tim Roth, whatever.
Specifically Tim Roth.
Yeah. Well, what's the civilian name? I completely forget.
Blonsky.
Blonsky, right. I don't think he's a good guy, but I believe his motivations, his internal motivations kind of work for me, right? And I don't think that he would have lured Jen into a den of people that were just out there to beat her up. Like, it didn't vibe. Do you know what I mean? Like, if anything, the fact that his platitudes are so transparent and goofy.
But even if he's a bad guy, I don't think that's his MO, right? He would want to do it himself.
Exactly. Yeah. There's just a thing that's like, and I didn't know any of these characters. Well, I mean, I think I'd seen Manbull a couple of times. He's a daredevil baddie.
Porcupine was the only one.
Porcupine's the one. I've seen him in the comics. Yeah.
I've seen him in he fought Iron Man in like the 70s at some point.
But he's got actually a great bit, recurring bit in a Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, where he's like, starts out as kind of a bad guy and then ends up being like her buddy. It's the run where she's pregnant and has a kid, which is a fantastic run.
It's really good.
Adapting it. They should adapt that arc because that arc is really good. But that's the only place I ever knew him before, and he looks just as janky in person as he did.
So I didn't, and it does not make any sense, but I had trust in Blonsky to be like, these people aren't going to jump you. Like, if they try to jump you, it's going to be She-Hulk and Abomination versus, I don't know, a bunch of goofballs, like C-tier, D-tier baddies, like, forget it.
Guy who thinks he's a vampire, guy with a magical crowbar who doesn't even have a magical crowbar.
Doesn't have it.
Yeah, like, they can knock over a liquor store, but it's like, come on.
And the comedy between the guy who looks like a matador and the guy who's a bull of his purple.
Right.
I'm not a matador.
And it's fair. And then he did some
Spanish
light matador.
Isn't
like,
even
oh my God.
Nationality, it's a language.
So we're going around the circle. We got Saracen. I think he may actually be a vampire-esque thing, because sure, why not? We know we've got Blade coming, and what's his name from Westeros is going to be the Dark Knight. Going around that circle, just mentally, I believe the next in
the
line...
The Black Knight, right?
Yeah, I was going to let it go. But you...
wait, what did I call
it? Was like, you call it the Dark Knight. Yeah, it was like, wait, Batman. He's going to be Batman?
Oh, God. Okay, whatever.
I was confused. That's...
Who cares? Just, come on.
That's why I was going to let it go, but no. John can't let it go.
Oh. In this circle, we all love... the next guy around is, I believe, the Darkest Knight, even the Black Knight. Wait, no, it's not. Who is it? It's, El... What's his name?
Elegia.
The Eagle, right? Is that...
Yes.
Okay. Forgive my Spanish. It's... I don't live anywhere close to Spain or Mexico. So, he... In the comic books, is a mutant. They don't bring that up.
Oh, yeah.
Except
okay. Yeah.
That he flourishes his sword, and at one point, Blonsky tells him, hey, what did I tell you about the bioelectric stuff?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's weird. Yet another guy that we're not going to explain, and that's fine. And his relationship with Manbull is great. I think that is a completely funny setup that naturally has to breed a little bit of animosity while bonding them together in some sort of silly way. Neither of these characters are particularly well thought out or fleshed out or anything, but you could see why they'd want to fight each other and have like find some sort of symbiosis between themselves, right?
Yeah,
sure.
They're just fun.
That's it.
Also, they're just fun.
Yeah,
I mean, it's characters that are not going to get used in anything else, right? I'm sure. Off on
Saracen is like, not going to show. Saracen's not going to show up in Blade.
No, yeah.
Anybody want Porcupine?
Porcupine would be great. No? Knowing him from the comic books, I mean, as you know, like if he shows up in another show,
yeah,
as a bit
fine,
you know, yeah, like as kind of the guy who he was in the comic books would right. be great.
So that's exactly who we land is as we're moving around the circle.
I know. Porcupine. I looked that actor up. He's done nothing other than this. It seems unlikely, but it, you know, it'd be cool.
Sure.
Did you guys also feel Porcupine needed the most help there? Right. Porcupine's kind of trapped.
Yeah.
In.
Well, yeah. He's stuck.
And
in
it is.
I mean,
so...
that's not a.
It's so over the top. Not over the
That's
top.
Not healthy.
Yeah, you don't think so?
Or sanitary, hygienic.
No,
really.
It's definitely not that.
He's literally surrounded himself and he refuses to come out of a costume full of quills that keep everybody away from him.
It a is, glass cage of emotion.
In terms of anybody that would be sitting in a therapy session, I kind of think that like that is the most on the nose. Like... They could have had him getting their free crappy coffee out of the back and like eating a donut and just being really prickly to people, but they didn't. They were just like, you know what? How about we skip to the point where he's literally wearing prickles all over him? And I like that Jen's superpower in this episode is not tossing Wrecker across the room. It is that she's open and that she acknowledges that, you know, there's a dichotomy between her two selves and she doesn't like it. And that sort of helps Porcupine open up, right? If anything, I felt I was a little bit undercut by doing the smell gag. But fine.
It's a comedy, though.
It's exactly. Yeah.
So, I'm okay with that.
How do you guys feel about him?
I thought that all of these characters were well done.
Yeah.
I mean, the dynamic that they create there is great. As I already mentioned, like having sort of a bad guy support group and using these characters who are otherwise not characters that people have an attachment to, right? Like it's all sort of goes to further the discussions we've talked about, like, hey, this is a wild universe full of all these people who have different powers or whatever. And sometimes they're heroes and sometimes they're villains. And sometimes they're just people, right? Like sometimes they're just people working through their issues. So I thought that, you know, making this the sort of bulk of the show, I mean, it gives an opportunity for some great snappy writing and to really give a fun scene for that centerpiece of Tatiana Maslany doing, you know, explaining why she is so wrapped up in all of this. And I thought that worked really well.
Yeah. Guy talked about it already, but it's the best part of the episode, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the meat of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, there's some great lines in it though.
Yeah.
That's not,
there are some good lines.
Yeah.
My name's Man Bull, not Mechanical Bull.
Well, and I liked all of them like cheering her on for deleting his contact from the phone, right? Like, it is a scene that is both funny and manages to be kind of sweet at the same time. And I think that's a great way, again, of having your expectations subverted, like about how something's going to go. Even having Wrecker show up, and like I got to be honest, I did not remember who that was, and I loved the.
He didn't quite look like him either.
Yeah,
right. And the flashback thing was fantastic.
The flashback was great. I mean, like, did we previously on him? We should previously.
That was one of the better fourth wall breaks I've ever encountered. That was great. It was really good because I was like, I have no idea who this guy was, and I pay attention. I watched these.
Yeah, I mean, and like it's. It's the thing too, right? Where on another show they would just do like flash and like flashback to, right? They wouldn't explain it. They just like she would narrow her eyes and they would.
And she asks.
To it. You'd be like,
she asks if he was in the beginning, right?
Yes, exactly. Right. Right. I mean, all that is great because I always find those flashbacks usually annoying because they're usually to something that was like. It's a 40-minute episode, and it's a flashback to something that happened 20 minutes ago, and it's like, Jesus, is nobody paying attention? Like, I mean, oftentimes in, like, heist shows, I think, are a good example of, like, let's flashback to this detail that maybe you weren't paying attention to, but it's about to become relevant. It's like, well, I can just remember that. Whereas in this show, it literally was, that was, like, four episodes ago, and it was a one scene, right?
In a dark alley with a bunch of stuff going on.
Yeah. So I'm not. No, I don't remember him. And you knew that I wouldn't remember him. And that's a good usage.
Yeah.
Subverting him previously on is sort of next level meta. And I really dig it. I also. Who are these idiots? Like, how did they get? Who are they? Like, this guy. Why is he there? It feels like everybody there is a superpowered dude. Okay, he was the Wrecker. Had he done other stuff that we don't know? Like, you know,
presumably. What? I mean, he stole. They somehow jacked an Asgardian construction worker.
Right. So.
Right. So he must be a criminal of some kind.
Sure. I guess what the other stuff I'm asking about is like, did they do other superpowered stuff prior to being hired to, you know. Get some blood out of Jen. Like, were they?
Let's assume yes, but
yeah.
I mean,
I guess the difference is like, were they specifically crafted and given the weapons to go after Jen, or were they just like, here's a bunch of thugs with a bunch of fancy kit that we can throw some money at to go get stuff from Jen? And when that doesn't work out, this record guy is like, you know what? This whole thing is a bad idea. Like, why would I jump a woman in the alley? Like, that's not cool. I want to rob a bank. I want to tear the door off a bank door and run away with $1 billion, which is dumb and doesn't happen.
It's heavy, but for one thing.
Well, do you know what I mean? Like, there's a different thing.
I know what you're saying.
Know, yeah,
and I totally think it's the latter. I think these were guys who are like maybe like low level.
Yeah,
they reminded me of It's the guys in Spider-Man, the first Homecoming.
They're just taking advantage of the new all the new stuff.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to make a thing of it, but look, there's a difference between a heist and a mugging. Like a heist, You get George Clooney and Brad Pitt and Don Cheadle to do it. A mugging. Yeah.
Well, and they're heisting. They're heisting from people who are bad, right?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. At least in the Ocean Levels movies, don't. Whatever. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
the one that I saw. Can't remember
they're
if I saw
pretty
more.
Fun,
I can't remember
yeah.
if I saw that more than one actually.
Yeah. Honestly, it's just a bunch of people who I assume are good friends remaking old movies and having a good time doing it. So, sure.
What more do you need in life?
Yeah.
Well, you need a Biffcast.
Well, that is true.
Yeah. And Rebound Prime.
I was going to say, now's a great time to introduce Biff Prime.
I've been dodging this for a while. Okay, what the hell with Josh? I was very sad. Like I don't know how the show.
So, and
did
he's
it.
Still he's still just a lackey too, right? I mean, he's yeah. not he's not the big bad. He's right. just working he's for working Hulk for King, or he's you know he's one of he might he maybe he runs that website or something. But he or I guess that is the Hulk is that website run by the Hulk King? Because yeah, because
no, well, I don't know if that's yeah. I don't.
It
think
is
we know. I mean,
his icon on that website, so it seems like maybe it is his website, but.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Don't read too much into that. Their emojis are not the Apple emojis. I don't think. I don't believe so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Can we? So I mean, do we have any likely contenders for Hulk King? Is it somebody we've met, or is it somebody that we haven't met? I mean, we've talked about this before, obviously, but like, we only got two episodes left.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like there are a lot of likely candidates from amongst the characters that we've met.
My calculus really on this has changed.
There's a budding conspiracy out there, which, you know, we have discussed this person before, which is Nikki.
Okay, you know what? Fire up Conspiracy Corner.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. I love the investment I've been putting into sound effects, and you're just like, okay, here's a... Do you know what?
There's me opening a door to a corner.
Do you know what? This is not a joke. I'm looking at my recommended for you portion of Disney Plus right now, and it is entirely 1990s. Maybe you heard that little click.
Yeah, I was doing it earlier. Sorry.
No, it's fine.
I was taking screenshots to make shirts later.
1990s comic book TV shows. Cartoon TV shows. In order to try to pull out sound effects, it would be more appropriate than just me sticking in Star Trek stuff constantly. And the other day, I am a dummy, and I pressed play on something, and for various reasons, mostly having to do with work, my iPad just does not go to sleep unless I tell it to. And I woke up, and I just heard the lines from Ultron. You have twisted my head off. I can no longer function. And I was like, oh, that's perfect. And
you
want
gotta
that
get
line
that
for
one.
The show. Yeah. I'm like, okay, I'll take a note of that. And then
it's time to talk about our sponsor, Audio Hijack.
Right. It was like five. Well, I'm not going to Audio Hijack like 8 hours of audio while I
no,
sleep.
But like,
but if you think I'm weird. It's because somehow in my sleep, I listened to like 8 hours of 1990s cartoon shows. Anyway, and I still don't know where it is, but I'll take it up and find it.
Yeah. Okay. So Conspiracy Corner.
Yeah.
About Nikki. So I guess Dan mentioned this the last episode. She looks into the camera at one point. I think it's pretty brief, but anyway, she does look into the camera for just a second. Somebody on Reddit or something was posting, or TikTok posted a little video drawing out the similarity between her earrings in the last episode and Agatha's brooch.
Oh, and no. this is some serious conspiracy.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Hang on. Right. We're not even done yet. Yeah. So Agatha, I think we talked about this when we covered that show, has a son named Nicholas Scratch, because Mr. Scratchy was the rabbit. So the, you know, the conspiracy theory is that Nikki is Agatha's daughter, and is somehow, you know, using dark magics to manipulate this whole situation.
Wait, before we say anything, John, I want to know personal assessment of this theory. How many are you rating this?
I'm on the fence on this one. There's a lot of things going for it.
Hang on. Did you get my care package full of jazz gummies?
I wish, because then I wouldn't be on the fence.
I don't think it's legal. Come visit. You can have all the jazz gummies you want.
I'm on the fence because the reason that I'm on, well, one of the reasons I think I'm leads into this theory is that they talk about, I mean, the first thing that I was like, no, it's like, this is Hulk blood. This is like, I mean, like, you know, why would somebody want her blood, which is going to be used to like either stabilize other Hulks or make new Hulks or something like that. And then they very clearly with Madison pointed out that blood is also just used for magic spells and stuff like that. So there's they deliberately made that point in this show already. So it's possible. I mean, I think it's possible.
But if she comes out singing "It Was Nikki All Along," I think,
yeah,
derivative.
But wait, yeah, I would say so. Here's something that I don't know if it supports it or not. But previously, we were shown a giant adamantium, whatever it is, not adamantium, vibranium, whatever, a big ass needle that we weren't told, but we're sort of led to suspect would pierce She-Hulk's skin in order to get some blood. And then this episode,
yeah, we did not, thought about that
right,
too.
We did right. not get that.
Yeah.
Are there possibly two things going on here? I don't know. The introduction of Wong and having Wong come along, it's like Wong is a funny character, but also there's a lot of magic going on there. So
Nikki also, when Wong shows up, Nikki beats it.
But she also is the one who gets him to show up by posting the thirst trap.
I know, she does. Yeah, she does. But then the minute he shows up, she walks out.
So I want to add the other part of that, that it is a little bit, as far as the syringe goes, let's not forget that a bunch of the stuff on the Intelligentsia site are death threats. So maybe that's a way to kill her, not a way to get her blood for...
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
So maybe, to your point, there are multiple things going on. Someone's trying to kill her.
I think the ultimate point is that we don't know. When there's no, I mean, like, it could be Nikki. Maybe it might be
around all my knowledge here, John.
It might be Nikki. I'm still thinking of the leader, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the one that makes the most sense, but we haven't even, no one's even mentioned the leader at this point. So
like
you'd have to know that movie, and it's not exactly a movie that is super well known within the MCU.
I think you could introduce him as like reintroduce him in this role and have it be like, look, we didn't spend that much time with Blonsky like explaining who he was, right? It only took a few minutes, like, hey, he tried to kill my cousin, true. Right? Like, we don't we can shorthand
although he
it.
Was in he problem. Was he was, you know, people were reminded of him by having him be in Shang-Chi.
Sure. But I think if it ended up being a reveal, and especially because we know the leader is going to be in Captain America, this is the lead into that.
Yep.
That's a possibility. I think we're short on other candidates.
Yeah.
Unless
we kind of are. I mean, her date,
also,
whatever, Todd.
Todd.
Oh, right. Yeah.
There's that guy still out there, but he seems like he's the masked member of the Wrecking Crew.
Yeah. I would say the thing with Nikki that argues against it is, one, to the point, I think, as we discussed in a previous episode, the real villain is misogyny.
Yes.
Having the villain,
I agree with that too,
would be kind of, and also having Nikki, who has the foundation, like her relationship with Jen has been such a strong part of this story, that would feel,
I agree,
very much like a betrayal.
I think that's that's pulling the rug out of the wrong thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. I already feel a little betrayed. Well, I feel very betrayed by Josh. I don't know how this show did it, because it's not like it's a particularly heartfelt. I mean, who's Jen? I don't know. Like, I don't know her in life. In as much as you may from, I don't know, Mad Men or some one of those quote unquote dramas that delve into characters. I don't know who she is, but I did know that she deserved a Josh. Like, they did, they shorthanded all of that immediately.
Yeah.
In the first few episodes. And I was really depressed by this turn. I felt that.
Yeah, it's upsetting.
It's really upsetting. And yeah. I was mad. And
I was mad. Yeah.
Much.
Yeah.
I was like literally mad. I'm like, oh God, I wish that mad. I really wish you hadn't done that.
Yeah.
And at the same time, if they do that with, if they undermine her female support gang.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to lose faith in the show. If there's I'm changing
my 50-50 to 40-60.
Well, I don't, I'm not trying to
60
argue.
Against 60 against.
I'm not trying to argue. I'm not trying to argue with you. I'm just saying that it's like, if the show has a thesis, it's girls stick together and support each other. So far, as far as I understand it. If they're like, oh, guess what? Jen also, her best friend betrayed her. I don't know where we go from there.
I think there's a chance. I think there's also a chance, though, that Nikki could be something else, but is not the bad person.
Yeah, that could be a possibility. I think you've undermined your message. Like, you've muddied it, too.
Wow!
Are you saying that to me, or saying that to Marvel?
No. I'm saying that if you made her the villain, I think you've muddied the message.
Exactly. I agree.
Yes.
I agree.
And yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think we all agree on that point. So for me, the chances of that seem very low. I agree with John. It's possible that she's got something else going on.
Yeah, I think that's more. I think that's more my 40-60 thing, right? I mean, I think it's possible that there's something else going on with her. I'm not even
sold on that, but you know,
that's why I think. I mean, I just think that part is 40-60 as opposed to. You know, her being the bad guy is lower than that.
Yeah, like a guardian angel, like a ish.
Yeah, you know, something like that.
That would be one thing.
I don't know.
It's fine.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to rate it? Did we miss anything?
Yeah.
I got some more quotes.
Josh's head on a pike
the entire episode.
I don't need you to point out my obvious mistakes. I have my mom for that. You're thirsty in a cliche. And so much unnecessary backstory.
He
has to announce the two guys when they enter, and she's just like, why is all of a sudden this exposition?
I like that. There's a couple of lines that I think get overwritten because they're of their positioning, but there's a bit in there about like, you didn't have to throw him, like, and someone goes like into a bunch of perfectly stacked chairs.
I love the fact that it was called out that they were stacked because I don't know if you've ever hung out in a church basement for whatever reason, but like,
yeah,
somebody has to stack those chairs, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a pain in the butt. And usually everybody gets up and leaves, and then some sucker gets stuck stacking the chairs.
And it's like, God, you can just tell that. I forget who said it, but they had to stack those chairs. Like, God, I did such a good job with those crappy little metal folding chairs.
It was Manbowl, wasn't it? I think.
Manbowl feels like the long suffering kind of guy. Yeah. No wonder he's furious, you know. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do a ritual so we can get a little sweep in before.
Yeah, we got some sweep to do. I'll start. I'll just go ahead. It's a biff. I mean, I think the nut graph of this piece is so good, where she talks about competing with Jen competing with She-Hulk. We're 7 in and we've hit it at the right point exactly. I think it's been building to that sort of reveal, and it's well done when it happens. I think the background characters we get here are delightful, fun, not super deep, but deep enough to make them serve their purpose and be
funny, which is part of their purpose too. So I really enjoyed the episode. I'm pissed at Josh, of course, but well, you know, hopefully he'll get thrown into a stack of neatly stacked chairs.
If only. Yeah, I'll go. I mean, I agree. It's a Biff for me. I think it's interesting. It's a reminder once again that this show is a comedy above all else.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's think, just in the same way the last week was kind of a self-contained episode, so is this, right? Like, it's an episode set in a particular location for the vast majority of it. And it really focuses on kind of like internal challenges. You know, there's some light fighting. But like,
yeah, it's not, and not very serious, yeah.
Right. I mean, same as last week, though, right? I mean, the fight with Titania is not like a big...
It's a little more slammy-fisty, though. It's, yeah, still, yeah, yeah, but it's not...
It ends with her falling on her face. I mean, it's not a fight that has any of your typical Marvel, like, sort of production value to it. So this show is a comedy, and I think this episode is a great bit of comedy with a nice, like, dramatic progression inside of it, too, right? Like, the fact that... We have this revelation of Jen, which we've all been talking about for the whole time, is like there is an identity crisis happening here.
Yeah.
And I think that that is something that like needs is sort of driving the thrust of the show. And I still feel that the end result is that by the end of the season, she is like confident about like being both Jen and She-Hulk, like they sort of, you know, said at the in the card at the end, right? Like we like both of these people.
Yeah.
Or that she is. There's one person who's kind of both of them in the same way that, you know, Bruce and like, you know, the Hulk have come together with the Smart Hulk. You know, it's about her finding equilibrium between these two halves of her. So I think that progressed that way. And then unlike last week, we get a little bit of like an overarching plot, but the overarching plot is just not as important in this show as it is in a lot of the other shows. It's just not the way the show is structured.
Yeah.
And I think that's fine. I don't have any... any problems with that's handled. No notes, other than Josh is a dick. I mean, but that's...
Sure, yeah.
We all know obvious. That's happening. Yeah, there we go. Guy?
I think this may be my favorite episode of the series so far. It accepts and enjoys the silliness of the entire premise. She-Hulk having her Prius Prime wrecked does not prohibit her from going home. She's She-Hulk.
Right, I was thinking like she could just jump, right?
Yeah, she's fine.
That's not how the Hulk gets around.
Yeah, I know, it's not a problem. But I love the sort of the little limitations put on it, and this is ultimately a story about Jen and not She-Hulk. She-Hulk is the persona adopted by a person who feels obliged to put on a stronger personality in a public space. And this is the episode where that sort of gets addressed directly. I think specifically after she delivers her monologue and then transforms back into Jen and is accepted by the group as having told the truth. I think that's almost the turning point of the series. I don't think this... I'm increasingly convinced that this series is not about punching anybody in the face.
Yeah.
But it is about coming to terms with your own self and your own being.
I think there's going to be some punching in the face later. But
there has to be punching in the face. Yeah. And I'm kind of...
It's still a Marvel.
I know.
Property.
And I'm not looking forward to that because I kind of don't...
I know. I'm a little apprehensive about it myself.
Like WandaVision was like, okay. Okay.
Right.
And then we had a pew pew pew. And I'm like, yeah. You know why Laura Dern says pew pew when she shoots somebody? Because that's not the... Laura Dern takes out the super duper ultra Star Destroyer by flying into it, not by, you know, pew-pewing anybody. That one's for you, Dan.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
For your show, which is called Pew Pew.
It should have been.
That's actually the Porcupine's show.
Thank you. I liked it a lot. I liked... thank you for bringing that out, because there are a bunch of people in this little circle who they don't just write over. They're humorous, but they're respected, right? Like, the we don't know why the porcupines dress up like that, but nobody is crapping on them so much as, like, okay, you've really got to get that suit dry clean kind of thing. There's... this show still manages to thread a needle where it's funny but respectful at the same time. Like, the jokes never punch down. And for somebody like She-Hulk, I like that it's always punching up, right? And it's punching up at the intelligentsia. And I know
it's tough because she's really tall.
Yeah, I think. Well, I know. That's where he was going with that.
Yeah. And I had.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Not sorry.
You know, I edit this and I can make you sound like total idiots.
I mean, how hard would that be?
You go back and listen to the first 150 episodes.
What would you have to do? I mean, I figured that editing is what makes us sound smart.
Oh, just you wait. So, long story short, look, this is Biff. I think it's my favorite episode of the series. I think Jen specifically lays out the thesis statement, and I liked it more like this. I don't know where it's going to go. At this point, I am kind of convinced that we will not see Daredevil. except they will drop an extra episode that is completely narrated by Jen, by She-Hulk, being like, oh, I heard you wanted Daredevil. And then they'll just do some dumb one-off adventure that doesn't make any sense and is completely unconnected to the story.
That'd be great.
And it'd be like, you know what? Why did we do that? We reeled you in. Thank you for your money. Like, she won't ever say thank you for your money, but you know it's on her mind. Yeah. Or Disney's mind. Yeah, I feel bad wrapping up on that because it feels cynical, but I like it. I feel it's right.
Yeah.
Dan?
I think that's it.
Dan, save us, man.
All right. Well, I'm going to save you by taking over to Superhero Sweep is how I'm going to save you.
Okay.
So there's a lot of Marvel news this week in the Superhero Sweep business. Among them, let's start with Blade. I'm going to throw that out there because I think this is kind of a quick one. So Blade had a director attached to it, of course, starring Mahershala Ali, who we heard briefly at the end of Eternals in the role made famous by Wesley Snipes. I was already on the calendar, right? Like, it was already supposed to had a release date and everything, which was, I want to say, November 2024.
That seemed earlier. Yeah, because it was a Fantastic Four is the next year, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. No, sorry, November 2023. I take it back.
Fantastic Four is 24.
Tricky if it's in fact just switching directors. So it was previously. Bassam Tariq, who is now left because I think it sounds like because the schedule just he got pushed back and he couldn't be there anymore, etc. So they've had to find somebody else.
Because he's staying on as a producer.
Yes. So it seems like
there's not amicable. A lot of ill will or anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've got a link here that I had to Google because I figured I would put it in the show notes. And if you Google it, the other correction is like, you know, Blade director fired. I feel like it's been 3 weeks running where I'm so sick and tired of just bad reporting. Things change. Don't worry about it. Well, worry one way or the other. I don't care. Just judge the final. Judge the final.
Guy
product.
Doesn't care. Well, okay, people.
None of us do. It's the final product, right? And did he get fired? No. There's a million reasons that a bunch of things change. And
movies move around a lot.
The way life is. Everything moves around a lot. Like, God. Don't get me mad.
not everything is that Florence Pugh movie.
I don't even think that Florence Pugh movie made up. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Although I did make a great joke where...
Although I am brilliant.
I forgot.
If I may humbly say so.
I forgot for the moment that we were doing this in public. I had a joke of Chris Pine with his like long blonde hair with his headphones on at cons. And Kirk standing trial on Ruhr Penthe or whatever, like for killing the Klingon ambassador. And I was like, don't wait for the translation, answer me now. And I think three people liked it, but one of them was our friend Todd, and I was like, okay, I got somebody. I got a good one. That's all it takes.
Yeah, exactly.
I laughed at that, but also, I mean, you know, that's a historical thing too, right? Like that was itself a reference.
Oh God, yeah. You know what? I'm cutting all of this. I know.
Okay, this is cool. We'll talk about it. Yeah. It's fine.
Khrushchev is what you're talking about.
Adlai Stevenson.
Adlai Stevenson. Yeah. I made a joke referencing that like 3 months or two so ago. And
I made one 6 months ago,
and nothing. Nobody, zero.
Oh wait, so we all struck out on the same joke?
No, it was not. No, it was just the same reference.
Smarter than all of you.
Yeah.
Anyway,
nobody knows the Adlai Stevenson part, except for the people on this podcast.
So
just us.
Okay.
By all means, though, let's spend more time on this.
What do you care? I'm going to be the one chopping this up. I just want to learn something.
I have a limited amount of time. That's what I care. We got to keep moving here. We got other stuff to talk about.
Okay.
So in addition to Blake getting a new director, we also had a shakeup in Armor Wars announced a while back, but then re-announced like 2 weeks ago at D23 as a show. And all of a sudden it is now a movie, which is happens a lot.
Yeah,
that's weird. Like that is a little more unusual to me. The question is, why did you change it? Is it because you felt like the story was better suited to the movie form? Because like, it's not nothing to go from like, okay, we're gonna produce a six episode. You know,
yeah, it doesn't seem. I mean, I don't know what's involved, but it seems like a lot would be involved.
Because you think sometimes it's more like expensive in some ways to make a movie. Like there's theatrical hooks and stuff like that. Like. Promotion's a little different. Like, I don't know what's all entailed in that. I mean, not to say, as I said at the time, I mean, Don Cheadle's been in this universe for more than a decade. He's fantastic. He, by all means, deserves a starring role in a movie. I'm just fascinated, especially because this was being described as a follow-on to Secret Invasion, that we decided to, like, bounce that into the theaters instead. Mm-hmm. To me, seems a little wild, but I don't know exactly what to take away from this, other than I'm very curious to see how they adapt what they was going to be probably six episodes into a, you know, probably what, 2 hour plus movie. I mean, it's not that far off, I guess, but still, it's an interesting choice.
Yeah.
So did either of you read the original Armor Wars? I think they've probably revisited it. Mm-hmm. Like,
gosh,
man,
I think I read part of it, but that was so long ago.
Basic premise is that Tony Stark discovers that some particular control chip that he'd been using has been deployed broadly across the Marvel Universe, often sold by Justin Hammer, who we saw in Iron Man 2. And he does not like that, because the Tony Stark, in that era at least, was 100% anti... military industrial complex, right? They started with that in Iron Man 1, and then kind of just Iron Man 2, that opening scene's like, hey, I've privatized national security. It's like, that's not wasn't really the point of the character, but fine. And they expanded upon that rather than his substance abuse, rather than his alcoholism. They sort of went down the track of like, well, why don't we follow this path? And that's where we get Ultron and a whole bunch of other stuff, and is, you know, ultimately a sacrifice. And I like the MCU character. I really, really do. What that means for Armor Wars is a little complicated, right? Like,
yeah,
does he want everybody to have an arc reactor? No, obviously not. Some Russian jackass. And I feel very confident that all Russians are jackasses. Not all of them, but I feel pretty confident that this Russian jackass walking onto an F1, like, come on, man. Like, what are you doing? And it was a cool and fun scene. Probably one of my favorite scenes of that whole movie. And so he stopped him from having that. The arc reactor would be what I think was the element of Stark Tech that may have sort of permeated the MCU that, you know, Rhodey may want to reclaim.
Yeah.
But a lot of that comic arc revolves around going after people that use technology in order to have their superpowers and disabling them. Like Iron Man versus Stilt Man. I don't know if you've seen Stilt Man, but they decided Stilt Man uses some sort of Stark technology in order to make his legs really, really, really long.
I've seen Stilt Man.
Yeah. Is that a thing that you'd really need an episode about? Where it's like, no. Do you? No, probably not.
I might like that.
Yeah, I would. I would definitely like that. So
I'd definitely watch it. Let's put it that way.
So here's the thing. I don't know about it. And also, I love Don Cheadle. I really love Don Cheadle. I do not care for War Machine. I don't care about his name. I think it's antithetical to the genesis of Iron Man, and I'm not sure where they want to go with it. And I think it does tie into our sort of Skrull choices, right? Like who's good and who's bad, and if Rhodey's bad, can we really do a movie about him? Like how?
Well, I mean, I'm not convinced that he's I think it sounds like.
Yeah. I think so, you're jumping to some conclusions.
Well,
so here's
a, well, I think the fact that they want to do a show or a movie about him makes it less likely that he's a Skrull.
So yes. Let me throw this out here. This is a quote from Don Cheadle talking about what the book's about or what the movie's about. If you know anything about the lore and you've read the comic books, you understand that it's a series that was built around Tony Stark's tech getting out and Rhodey taking it on to go get this tech back from the bad hands, the bad actors whose hands it's in. And as Marvel does, it's also an opportunity to take the mythology and tip it on its head a little bit and come up with different ways to tell the story. So, you know, obviously we can't tell the story with Tony, so already the story is massively changed from the comics because Tony's dead.
But he goes after a bunch of S.H.I.E.L.D., I forget what they're called. Mandroids, like literally robot. Well, it's dudes in suits. He goes after Cap at one point because Cap is trying to protect like a S.H.I.E.L.D. facility that's using his tech. Goes after a bunch of heroes too.
But I can see this being more about one of, you know, certainly an issue of proliferation. I mean, and talking about that as an issue and maybe getting Rhodey to question his own, like, well, I mean, if nobody, you know, is it right for me to have this power? Like, if we think this power is bad and that, like, this needs to be controlled, you know, in the same way that Rhodey was on the side of the Sokovia Accords, right? Like, does somebody need to be holding them in check? Should I have access to this power? And, like, you know, talking a little bit, I think they're saying about, you know, he talked a bit about Tony's death affecting Rhodey, which we haven't really gotten a chance to see, even though he's popped up in a couple places. So I think this is an interesting opportunity to sort of explore that character in a post-Tony Stark world. I imagine it'll take some cues. Like you said, Justin Hammer played a big part. Apparently Sam Rockwell not confirmed to be in this show, but Walton Goggins will be returning. Ant-Man and the Wasp role. Right. So that's
makes sense.
You know, playing a part in this as
well. Yeah, because we never knew who his benefactor was, right? Did he call him the benefactor? Like it was there was money behind
somebody
this.
Who was buying, yeah, his buyer, whoever it was, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I mean I'm intrigued. I think
there's a
I'm
power
looking forward to the story
floating around there too.
Sure, yeah, exactly. I think making a movie about Rhodey dealing with the fallout of stuff, you know, makes a lot of sense, but you know, I'm curious to know how much this actually hinges on Secret Invasion. And I guess we don't know, and we won't know until we see that show.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense, and you've made me feel more secure about that choice.
What I'm here for.
Yeah. No,
I am. That's something a scroll. That's something a scroll would say.
Yeah. Oh God.
I don't know what you're talking about, John.
Sure.
All right. Last thing. Deadpool. We've known Deadpool is coming to the MCU.
Oh yeah.
It was announced this week in a truly hilarious video. You should go watch where Ryan Reynolds says basically they've recruited Hugh Jackman to reprise his role as Wolverine
because he had no other ideas.
I'm here for this. I
oh my God, so much so.
Enjoyed Hugh Jackman. You know what? I still haven't seen the second Deadpool movie. I thought the first was fine. It's not usually my type of thing. But I thought it was,
I like them and it's right at my limit really. But it's funny enough that I enjoy it. I don't think the second one was quite as good, but it was still fun.
I think it's also fitting.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, guys.
I agree with John. I don't like this character. This character is often, it's basically a reaction.
I love the comic book character for sure.
Well, it's very much a reaction to stuff that I'm like, yeah. Okay, I don't like the thing they're reacting to, so why? Yeah, it's not that I don't like it. It's just I've got it. I've got that in my head. I don't really need to know that. On the other hand, I watched Deadpool 1 and I really enjoyed it. There is heart there. And that's really all I care about. And I think the reaction of the Deadpool character is that heart was lost in some way, right? Like a bunch of pockets and ammo and murdering entities and just doing over the top stuff. And however, I mean, he's Canadian, so we know however. He's awesome. But however he did it, he landed it. Deadpool 1 worked for me in a way that I did not expect, because if you described any individual element, I'm like, I don't like any of that. If I see the entire thing, like, that's pretty great. And I went into Deadpool 2 being like, well, I can't do that again. And they didn't, but they kind of did. I had feelings. I was like, oh God, that's showing a lot of heart and showing a lot of caring. I imagine Deadpool 3 will be the same thing.
It's very much in line with Peacemaker.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Things that step right up to the line that I'm kind of like, I don't know if I can recommend that to anybody, but you actually made it work, right? So many projects are just like, you know what? We're going to go way overboard, and you don't understand what the feeling is that you're trying to impart. And I honestly do believe that at least the first two Deadpool movies have had heart, and they've conveyed it, and they've made it work somehow. And honestly, just the way that Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman have gone on along the years, it's like,
right?
Why not?
Well, that's what's so great about the thing.
I don't care if they're just sitting on that couch for 2 hours, and then like, just if the movie was just them sitting on a couch and riffing on what the story could be, I'd be like, you know what? That's weird. That is some abstract stuff, but.
Yeah,
I'm glad I gave you my money.
And like the idea of they're like wandering around the same house, you know, just like eating an apple or something.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it's funny.
I'm Hugh Jackman.
How Hugh Jackman makes million-dollar decisions.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you want me? Sure.
Yeah. Sure. All right.
Sure,
fine.
Ryan.
I think it's you know, the fact that they're clearly good friends. I mean, they've done a bunch of videos with each other, like for their various like alcohol brands and stuff in the past several years, which are usually pretty funny. I want to say, I feel like there's a nice bit of symmetry here, because Ryan Reynolds' first appearance as Deadpool was in the Wolverine spinoff.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So having
exactly.
Wolverine's last appearance, Hugh Jackman's appearance in Deadpool feels like a nice bookend, right? That's pleasing. I like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, And they asked him, like, you know, they had the second video where they talked about what's the relationship with Logan, obviously. And they're like, ah, you know, that still happens in the future. It's like, it doesn't matter, right? Like,
no, it doesn't matter. I mean, people...
None of that, like, is important.
Yeah. And I saw something where they, like, interviewed the director of Logan, like, you know, are you upset about this? Like
no.
I have a why? Job. I mean, like, what? Yeah, exactly. I'm doing other things. Get off my back.
He's literally directing the next... He directed the next indie movie, right? Like,
right.
So, you know, I don't know. He's off working with Harrison Ford. Good for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he's sitting around being butthurt because they're gonna use the character again.
He did post, I guess, on Twitter. He posted the shot of him getting, like, Logan getting impaled by, like, a tree or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a joke, which is pretty good. But, you know, why not? I mean, he doesn't care. He has no skin in that game. But I think the most interesting aspect of this is integrating Deadpool into the MCU and also integrating Hugh Jackman's Wolverine into the MCU. But because it's Deadpool, you can easily do it in a way that is like, if we want to just be
to,
like,
roll it back,
this doesn't
yeah.
matter. Mm-hmm. Who cares? It doesn't really matter.
Right.
But I also think it's nice to give, you know, again, going back to, like, X-Men starting in 2000, you know, Hugh Jackman has been one of the longest staples of all the Marvel films, right? Like, you know, he's played that role for a super long time, him and Patrick Stewart. We got Patrick Stewart back briefly. So it's nice to at least tip the hat to be like, where this is where all this started, and get him at least one appearance in the MCU, even if they end up recasting the role later. And frankly, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm glad that they'll be, on the one hand, I'm glad that they're going to do it and then they can move on. On the other hand, I'm worried this will embolden all the people who will be, like, super pissed whenever they cast anybody to replace him.
I don't care.
I know I don't care, but I just don't want to deal with it. I just don't want to hear all the whining. Yeah. That's it.
Like, I'm actively mad. Do you know what?
You do care.
Okay.
You care angrily. Okay. I hear you. Okay. I don't think you should have to. That's my point, guy. I don't think you should have to be angry about it.
I don't care about them being sad. And here is why. If you had been reading comics for, I don't know, I'm going to say more than 6 months, nothing makes any fucking sense. Don't worry about it.
Seriously.
It's all garbage. Sure. It's fine. Yeah. And if the MCU has turned into the comic book stand that you can flip through and pick out an awesome issue that you're excited about, good. Good for you. I am excited, and that's great. Maybe this is going to be one of those, hey, what happens if Wolverine fights Deadpool? We know his arm is going to get sliced into, like, 5 different pieces, right? Like, there's no way that Deadpool doesn't swing a punch and Wolverine doesn't just cut his arm into confetti. That's going to happen. And is that my kind of jam? No, not really. But is it funny? Sure. Is it true to the character? Definitely. And what's more important to me is that each one of these movies has managed to land some sort of humanist point, right? Like, it had heart, and I suspect this new one will be the same. And having a couple of people that just like to laugh with each other is it's always a treat. So I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Yeah, same.
Yep.
All right. Well, we should wrap up because we've been going on 40. For a while. Yeah.
That's it.
Cheers. You wanted to mention cheers.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers. 40. We, prior to doing the Warp Core, we used to talk about cheers a lot. It turned 40 years old.
It's true.
It is amazing.
Guy turned somewhere above 40. We should also
mention
that.
That's, yeah.
Happy birthday, guy.
I'm 48. Thank you. Yeah. I had my, I had some texts from both of you earlier today. I had
some delicious texts.
Yeah, no, I had my wife to be and her daughter called me up and sang happy birthday to me, and it was delightful.
No,
yeah, it nice. Not honestly yeah. That kind of brought a tear to my eye. Yeah,
well, sure.
Yeah, and then I got a text from Jalcut, which, you know, nice, and our friend. Paul Kavassis, who bought an ad on your other show.
Not familiar with his work.
he's great. Please, everybody, Rogan maybe just turned 20 this year. And honestly, we cannot produce podcasts without them.
Oh, yeah.
Believe me, I've tried.
I got two computers sitting here, both running Audio Hijack.
I mean, that's a very specific John problem, but yes.
It's a John solution, Dan. It's a very specific John solution.
Yeah. We this is not a, there's no sponsor here, but honestly, Audio Hijack and the people at Rogan maybe have done an amazing job over the years. And
we couldn't do the Warp Core without.
We could not. Well,
let's just say we wouldn't do the Warp Core.
We wouldn't do the Warp Core without them. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you everybody out there for reading the transcripts, following along with our conspiracy corners and our superhero sweep, and all this important stuff. We really appreciate it. As always, if you want to send us a note, you can find us at BiffCast on Twitter or BiffOfTheIncomparable.com. And of course, would not be here if I were not also joined by my fantastic co-host, John Maltz. Thanks for being here.
Dang it, I used up all my quotes.
Today's today, John.
Today's
Guy
today.
English, always a pleasure.